She brought her team to meet with our members, and they popped a question that we had never thought to ask in all those recruitment lunches, which was, have you ever fantasized about doing in your boss? So there's a moment of stunned silence, and then the room just exploded because it turned out everybody had. One woman said she fantasized about grinding up her boss in the coffee grinder. Another fantasized about swiveling her boss around in his swivel chair and swiveling him right out the window. All those fantasies went right into the script.
In 1980, a movie came out that seemed to tap into a moment. It was funny, sharp, and seemed to channel every working woman's frustrations and fantasies. Plus, it came packaged with a killer soundtrack song. But more than just a box office smash, the movie was actually created with and for a movement. And it created an upswell in demand for women's rights. How did a small group of women activists influence Hollywood? How did a comedy smash tap into hidden truths about the workplace? And what can we learn from the movie 9 to 5 and its partnership with the labor movement of working women about the power of art as resistance?
Come on! Everybody that works!
From Rebel Yell Creative, this is The Art of Resistance, a podcast about using writing, music, and all kinds of art to resist the status quo. I'm your host and producer, Amy Lee Lillard. And I'm an author, a podcaster, and middle-aged queer autistic weirdo who's been obsessing over artists who resisted since I was a kid. And today, I'm looking to make all the dangerous art and help others do the same. We're not taught this in school, because we're not taught most of the important stuff in school, but women have actually played a massive role in U.S. labor organizing from the start. In 1909, 20,000 teen girls and immigrant women working in factories and sweatshops in New York and other cities walked off the job in a massive strike. In the 1930s and 40s, women faced off with cops outside auto factories where workers were sitting down on strike. They gave a face to the unions in the news and won better wages, among other demands. By the 1970s, more and more women were in the workplace, and one in three was an office employee. They were the secretaries, the clerks, the ones keeping the offices running. They typed, they filed, they used massive copy machines. They got coffee, they took notes, and they did the work bosses didn't want to do. They put up with constant sexual remarks and jokes and dodged groping hands. And doing all that, they were still paid the least, ignored the most, and stuck without any chance of promotions or raises. In 1970, Ellen Cassidy was one of them, working as a typist in Boston. The job sucked. Bad pay, no opportunities to move up. This is Ellen in a 2023 presentation.
A group of us started sitting around on our lunch hour and talking about our jobs. Low pay, unequal pay, training men to be our own supervisors, having to do favors, all kinds of favors for our bosses, the lack of respect. As one woman put it, they call us girls until the day we retire without pension. And I think it all hit home for us one day when a student walked into the office, looked one of us straight in the eye and said, "Isn't anybody here?" "Well, I'm here. Can't you see me?"
One of those other women, Karen Nussbaum, was a passionate activist working in anti-Vietnam War campaigns, civil rights, and women's rights movements. And she realized she could use her activist skills and stand up for her rights at work and those of other women working in offices like hers. they gathered some office worker friends and started a newsletter called 9 to 5. They handed them out at bus stops on the way to the office, and soon they started getting letters from other women office workers filled with work horror stories, frustrations, and inequality. In 1973, 9 to 5 began organizing public meetings. They set up base in Boston, and their actions and protests often used humor and ridicule. 9 to 5 put out a call for working women to nominate the worst boss of the year. Some of the nominees? A boss that asked his secretary to type his daughter's term paper. A boss that asked his secretary to go to a local bar with a pager and alert him of hot babes. A boss that asked his secretary to peel 14 carrots for him every morning, which was his diet at the time. The winner of the contest? The boss who made his secretary sew up the crotch of his trousers while he was still wearing them. The organization, 9 to 5, showed up at his office, TV cameras next to them, humiliating the boss the way he often humiliated workers. Throughout the 1970s, 9 to 5 formed committees all around the country. They created a 9 to 5 Bill of Rights to demand respect, equal pay, and equal protection in the workplace. And many city groups won back pay, job postings, raises, on-site childcare.
Basically, we perfected the art of raising a ruckus, and you couldn't avoid us. I think the way some bosses saw it was that the wallpaper had come alive, and things began to change.
And then a chance meeting marked a new chapter in the movement. As I mentioned earlier, the co-founder of 9 to 5, Karen Nussbaum, was active in the anti-war movement. And that's where she met Jane Fonda. Now, Jane Fonda is a fascinating person. She was the kid of actors and went on to become a well-known and awarded actor in the 70s and 80s. And she still acts today in shows like Grace and Frankie. Along the way, Jane created fitness videos that 80s kids like me probably remember. My mom worked out to that VHS tape every night next to my bedroom. I still remember Jane telling all the women to flex and point. But more than anything, Jane Fonda was and is an activist. In the early 1970s, she was a major presence and contributor to the Black Panthers, which put her under government surveillance. She was also an active supporter of the anti-war and Native American civil rights movements. In 1972, she toured North Vietnam and got on the radio to plead to American troops to question their orders and stop bombing campaigns. She got the nickname Hanoi Jane, got a lot of flack. It's still brought up by lawmakers and news outlets as treason. A few years later, Jane was channeling her learnings and passions as an activist into movies. She produced Coming Home about war vets. She also made China Syndrome about the dangers of accidents at nuclear power plants. It was pretty prescient. Right after the movie was released, a nuclear power plant at Three Mile Island had a massive meltdown. Plus, those 80s workout videos? She actually did that to fundraise for the Center for Economic Democracy. But back to the 70s. Jane met Karen Nussbaum, who went on to create the 9 to 5 organization. Jane went to some of the meetings and listened to the stories of working women. She found her next film project. Together, Jane and Karen worked on a studio pitch for the movie idea. Then in 1978, once they got the green light for the movie, Jane brought scriptwriters to a meeting of 9 to 5 workers in Cleveland. Originally, Jane had been conceiving of the movie as a drama, but in this meeting, she asked what could be a strange question. Do any of you fantasize about killing your boss? As the exuberant reactions confirmed, the movie could and should be a comedy. As we know today, with The Daily Show, John Oliver, Seth Meyers, we're more likely to take our commentary with laughs. and making people laugh would make them more comfortable with the radical messages. So the scriptwriters made their drafts, and the movie went into production, and 9 to 5 continued to act as an advisor throughout the process. So the script ended up showing real experiences of working women.
20th Century Fox presents a tribute to anyone who has ever been overworked, underpaid, and pushed to the edge by an ungrateful boss.
The finished movie, 9 to 5, was just brilliant.
They arrive promptly at 9, because if they're not on time, they know they'll get the sack. But before they begin the daily grind, the boss takes his cup black. They listen to all his problems. They do their best to please. And even if they run the show, he gets paid for their ideas.
Great work.
And so long as he's alive, from 9 to 5, they'll take it all they can.
Rhodes, come in here.
But what will go on when the light finally dawns that it's time to get back at that man?
Jane plays a former housewife turned office worker. Lily Tomlin is the experienced assistant who's passed over for promotion again for the guy she trained. And Dolly Parton, in her first movie, is the new girl that's being chased around the desk. Their boss is the sexist, egotistical, lying, hypocritical bigot, Mr. Hart. The three women share their pains and frustrations together, and in one glorious sequence, all three of them share their fantasy for taking out Mr. Hart. Dolly, for example, is a cowgirl boss who harasses Mr. Hart with the same language he uses on her, then ropes him up like a prize steer. Then the movie gets wild. They accidentally poison Mr. Hart in his coffee, kidnap him, and keep him locked up.
You come over to my house tonight, and I'll just forget the whole thing.
Oh, you are rotten, Mr. Hart. Did anybody ever tell you that? I never thought I'd live to see the day I'd say this about another human being, but you are evil. That's right, evil to the core.
I love it when you get mad like that. I really...
I don't mean it. I know you think this is all a joke.
Oh, little chicken.
You're going to listen to me.
Hey, darling.
Whether you like it or not.
Don't hang me.
Shut up now and let me explain what happened. Can't you just listen?
Girlie, let me loose or I'm calling for help.
No, I don't want you to call for help. There. You won't listen, but you'll shut up and stay there. I got to figure out what to do.
And no one really notices he's gone. Together, the three women make the place a dream job. They add flex hours, daycare, equal pay, training programs. The company performs better than it ever has. Eventually, Mr. Hart escapes, but the damage is done, and the women have won. The movie is hilarious, poignant, and pointed, and it did bonkers at the box office. It was the second highest grossing movie of 1980, behind Empire Strikes Back. When the movie came out, women around the country saw themselves for the first time. This is Ellen again.
Women office workers had never seen ourselves as the main characters on the big screen, and the atmosphere in the theaters was electric. There's one scene where Jane Fonda, on her first day, is issued into this room with a large photocopy machine, and she like tentatively presses a button and papers start flying out of various orifices, and she's like frantically trying to pick them up, and her lip is starting to tremble. And women would stand up in the theater and say, "Push the stop button."
The organization 9 to 5 put together a 20-city tour to accompany the film. The movement behind the movie, as it was called, brought thousands out to demonstrate and attend meetings. Jane Fonda herself joined the tour. She spoke at meetings, she passed out leaflets, she visited the New York Times office to encourage women there to unionize. She also did a 15-second PSA. In it, she said the movie was a lot of fun to make, but call this number and get your own free 9-to-5 guide to office survival. Thousands of women did, and they got a mailing from the organization. And while Jane did press for the movie, she talked about the cause behind it. Here's Jane in a 1980 interview with Bobby Wygant.
There's already an eruption in the offices of America. There's a very powerful movement growing. It's called Women Working, the National Association of Women Office Workers.
It's a union, is it?
It's an association. There are unions as well. SEIU organizes secretaries in a number of locations. But it's a loose association, mainly made up of women who believe that women should be paid the same as men for doing the same work and be treated with more respect. We're trying to reflect in the film the fact that the work that clericals do, men and women, because there are plenty of men secretaries, is important work. You can run a company without a boss, but not without a secretary. Women feel their work is important. They know that that it's skilled work, and they want to be treated with respect that manifests itself both in the paycheck and in their treatment in the office. What's unusual about our film is that it deals with this very serious subject as a comedy. Have you seen it?
Yes, oh yes, yes, and people were laughing and applauding all over the place.
We've shown it to a lot of audiences, and they just roar. They just roar. It's very funny, and men love it just as much as women. And I think it's going to make a lot of people very happy.
And maybe a few people a little mad because they'll see themselves.
Well, nothing's fun if it's not controversial.
Right.
And then there's the song. Dolly Parton wrote and sang the song 9 to 5, and it hit number one on three separate charts. It also earned an Oscar nomination for Best Song. After the movie came out, the 9 to 5 organization worked to build on the momentum. They had big plans to unionize and protect more women in more industries.
And the movie, in turn, gave our movement a huge boost. After that movie came out, we had won the debate. Now it was time to consolidate our power, and that meant a union. Because only through a union contract do you get it in writing, guaranteed. Workers in unions earn higher pay, have better benefits, and they have a say over their working conditions. So in 1981, the Service Employees International Union, SEIU, granted us a nationwide charter, and our woman-led union, District 925, got off the ground all over the country. Not just SEIU, but other unions invested new resources in organizing women workers, and they discovered, none of you are going to be surprised, that union drives in woman-dominated workplaces, especially those with Black women, were more likely to succeed. And that was a surprise to those who early on told us, forget it, women can't be organized. They could be, and they were.
But then Reagan was elected, and corporate America rejoiced. Union busting became the order of the day. Gender equity took a nosedive. The religious right and the money men gained all the power. So the women got sneaky.
Just like every union in the 1980s and beyond, though, we encountered ferocious opposition. Employers tried every trick in the book, legal and illegal. In response, we were forced to come up with some clever tactics of our own. At the University of Washington in Seattle, what turned out to work was making Tampax machines a major issue at the bargaining table. Yes, we did want more Tampax machines at the worksite, but the real reason we kept talking about Tampax was that every time we used the word Tampax, the management negotiators got so flustered that some of them had to leave the room, and we won a great contract.
Since then, we've had ups and downs with labor organizing, and we've had backlash after backlash against gender equality movements. But the need for labor organizing endures. Gender inequality and harassment endures. So does that film, that song especially. Labor organizing continues, even in our new Gilded Age.
It can be harder to be a worker today than it was 50 years ago. low-paying, dead-end jobs are still with us, and women and people of color are most likely to remain stuck in those jobs. Some people are working two or three jobs just to put food on the table. The gender gap in pay is stuck at 82%, and much worse for women of color. The good news is the new wave of organizing is in full swing. Support for unions is at its highest level in two generations. 71% of Americans now support unions, and 88% of young people. We're hearing new voices and seeing new tactics, the barbecues run by the Amazon workers, the sip-ins at Starbucks, One Fair Wage for tip workers, the National Domestic Workers Alliance, 9to5 is still reaching out to women in every state, and postcard writing is at an all-time high.
It may be apparent, but I watched 9to5 a lot as a young kid. I loved the humor, the fantasy. I was fascinated with Dolly. I had a sense by then that working sucked. My mom hated her job at the bank. My dad was doing undercover police work that stressed us all out. Both of them were working so hard to support three kids. And as the oldest daughter, I became the third parent at a very young age. I was an undiagnosed autistic kid who had to take care of my brothers while being scared to death of 1980s realities. Kidnapped kids in the neighborhood, nuclear war threats, harassment of young girls. Watching movies was an escape. Decades later, as an adult, I watched 9to5 again. I was looking for that feeling I had when I was a kid, the comedy, the fun. And I was shocked at how radical it was, how pointed, how powerful. The movie is dated, yes. It's mostly white, yes. It's still relevant. Because as women, we may have come far on paper. We may have more nominal parity. But we're still paid less, still treated like shit. And damn if I haven't dreamed of taking revenge on a boss. All that to say, a film has endured for 45 years as a classic. And it was a deeply feminist and labor-based piece of art that supported a movement. The movie survives because of the song, itself a clear labor anthem, and the comedy. We took our feminism and labor rights like Mary Poppins, with a spoonful of sugar to make the medicine go down. And art has the particular power to do that. To make us laugh while learning. To make us more empathetic and understanding. To teach us about our world. That's the power of art as resistance. So with the story of 9to5 in mind, what do we do from here? We tell our stories, even if the powers that be don't want to hear them. We use humor and satire to tell the truth so all can hear. And we commit to making art as resistance for the long term, for a better world. The Art of Resistance is a podcast for the artists, the lovers of art, and people who want to resist but don't know how. These stories are designed to help us find inspiration from the past and empower us all to find some hope for today and tomorrow. I'm Amy Lee Lillard, and I wrote, narrated, and produced this show. And there's so much more to this story. At artofresistance.space, you'll find sources, images, and videos for this episode and all the others. Here's an easy way to learn more about Art as Resistance. Sign up for the free newsletter at artofresistance.space and get stories and tips every week. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next time.